Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2859. That's 2859. Tonight we're going to have a Dr. Romo on tonight. He comes on the show, I guess it's once a month on Thursdays. And let me see if this is he right here. I'm not sure. Dr. Romo, is that you?
That's me. Hello.
Hi, how are you? This is Carol Levine. Yeah.
Hi, Carol. Thanks.
Yeah, so, I'm happy to be with you tonight. I really am. And I'm looking at your bio here. I haven't had a chance to really be on a show with you before except for one time. But I thought to myself, there is one smart guy. That's what I said. Yes, I did. So before we get started, though, I don't know what you want to talk about tonight or if you have a topic or whatever. But let me get the mission statement read, and then we'll discuss that. Okay. We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. Number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. Presenting the facts to show child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. Number two is offering hope for healing to numerous pairs and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, everyone that knows me knows I always emphasize prevention, because I really wish that society would get more involved and understand really the issues of child abuse as they should, because they always think, well, it's not my kid that's going to get hurt. And but they don't realize every child is really at risk to a certain degree. So, you know, it may not be your child, but it might be the child down the street. And I do believe that it's going to be we the people, the survivors, especially the survivors, they're going to help make that dent in the statistics of child abuse. That's a given, because we know so much about it, because we walk the walk, we talk the talk, okay? It's as simple as that. And so by having shows like what we have tonight, we have on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we have people like Dr. Romo come on, and everyone is invited to call in and ask him any questions. It's 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And he will answer your questions. And, we need to work together as a people and start thinking more about our children, okay? Yes, we're living in tumultuous times right now. It's disgusting. It's horrible. It's horrifying what's going on. We all know this. And quite frankly, maybe our children even need us more now with all that's going on, because you never know what's going to happen when you walk out your door anymore. And, you know, let me tell you something, Dr. Romo, people are going backwards in their healing. I've noticed this because I'm the night owl. I get these calls. And a lot of people are very, very frightened about what, you know, the type of world that we're living in right now. And in our country here, you know, with all the things, the crimes in the street and so forth, they're afraid to even let their children out. And because a child can be walking down the street and get hit in the head by a bullet. It's not the gun's fault. It's the person behind the gun pulling the trigger. We're having all kinds of issues with people. And they are definitely going backwards. And so I get the people in the AM who are having nightmares. Sometimes I put them to sleep. And I think to myself, well, that could be good, or maybe I'm boring. I don't know. But either way, it worked, you know. But there is a lot of there are a lot of issues out there. I have a 619 area code. I'm going to open up this mic and see whom I'm speaking to. Carol Levine from the Stop Child Abuse Now show. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, Carol. It's Regular Girl. How are you today?
Hey, how you doing,
Regular
Girl?
I got here on time.
Yeah. Well, you know, Dr. Romo is on, and I don't know if you've been on his show before, but he's an awful smart guy. And I'd like to have, I'm glad I have this opportunity to run the show and to have discussions with him. And I know you always have things that you want to talk about also, but let's first ask if there's something that he'd like to discuss.
No, I look forward to listening to him.
You might want to pop in there, though. Go ahead, Dr. Rommel. Go ahead.
Well, a couple thoughts. One is I think there is increased anxiety for lots of reasons. I mean, and certainly things that have been bad for a long time are kind of now more visible, and, you know, we're bombarded with news. So that pushes people to regress. And so you were saying that a lot of people seem to be, you know, I think you said going back or regressing. That kind of makes sense. And so so that's one thought. I do have a kind of a topic in that related to that. Years ago, I put up a workbook, and I want to figure out how I can just send a box to NASCA and people can just have it. It's out of print. But I created a list of the ABCs of victimhood and the ABCs of call it healing, self-care. And I thought that might be a starting point. You know, start with the ABCs of victimhood, not just what happened to us, but how we continue inadvertently to re-victimize ourselves, and see what comes of that. And then look at the other side. So that's my thought about the topic. And one last thought is, you know, you talked about how important it is for people to recognize child abuse, child sexual abuse, its prevalence, and to be on the prevention side. And, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh passed away recently, and he had an amazing presence. I went and heard him at a talk many years back. And I was sitting in the back of this huge auditorium. It was a university like sports arena. And, you know, the monks came out and they did some intro work. And then when he came out, he started talking. And it's like a wave came over me. And just I felt like this amazing presence. And you said people fall asleep. I mean, there was something very soothing. This guy was so amazingly filled with compassion. So, but he said, as a quote, it's possible the next Buddha will not take the form of an individual. The next Buddha, they take the form of community, a community practicing understanding and loving kindness, a community practicing mindful living, and the practice can be carried out as a group, as a city, as a nation. And I think that's what the healing work is, you know, the mission of NASCA. But dealing with child abuse and its many forms, it requires a community. And as much as we can do the work ourselves to be, you know, good contributing members of that community, and then to expand, to build into a city or a nation. So So thank you for taking those calls and for hosting tonight.
Oh, you're quite welcome. You're quite welcome. You know, I tell you what, I think that what I'm seeing here in a little broader spectrum, if you will, I think that that's what we're going to come to. But unfortunately, you know, sometimes we have to have a struggle, and we're all certainly having a struggle right now, all of us, each in our own ways, and whether it be financial or whether it be from, you know, emotional abuses and stuff like that that we're going through because of child abuse, you know, and so forth. And I think that we have to get a safer world. We have to get our country, for one, has to be safer, okay, so that the people, you know, in our country can feel more at ease. We're like all, like I find myself sitting with my shoulders up to my neck. Now, you know what that means? That's anxiety, like I'm ready. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of people have that same type of mentality because of what's going on in our, you know, our country. And as long as we have all of this craziness that is going on the streets, I mean, I love New York City. I was born in New York. Regular girl, I think you were too, weren't you? Yes or no?
Yes. My family's from there, yeah.
I love New York, and I've seen over 50 Broadway shows, and I'd like to go back to Broadway and see more. And you know, there's just so many things that I miss about the city. I miss the pulse of the city. That's the type of person I am. I bought a house, doctor, out in the country, and it's so countryfied that if a car goes by, I get excited. You know, there's a car going by, you know, and that was a mistake on my part. So I have to somehow either acclimate myself to this, you know, different environment or remove myself from this environment to find happiness. Now, we don't have that today, all right? We don't have those choices, so many of us. Because those who are living in the urban areas, although it is coming out now to the suburbs and probably to the really suburbs like I am, the more rural areas, you know, where people are just being dropped off in vans. They're in vans. They're being dropped off. That happened over by my son's house. And these people, they don't know what to do, a lot of them. They're just happy to be in this country. And they're trying to find a new way, some of them. And then you have those that are bad guys that are being dropped off, too. Now, people know this. They know this. So they're all sitting, you know, like all stressed out. I hear this stuff at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. All stressed out because they're afraid that their neighborhood, maybe their neighborhood is good, and they're afraid it's going to go down because people are going to come on the neighborhood and they're going to cause trouble. And there's just too much anxiety. And so I tell people, take a week off from watching the news, okay? Because I watch the news and I scream at the TV set. I really do, and I don't care who hears me, all right? I do have some houses around me. But as long as we're living in this world, okay, and we have all this anguish, then it's pretty hard for people to stay at their level of healing because they don't know if they're going to have a job next week. They don't know if they're going to have to start homeschooling again. You know, usually it's the women. You know, they have a job and they have to stay home, and they're not teachers, and they do the best they can, you know. And then you have kids, the mask situation, should we wear them, should we not? There's all these things that are taking away from where we actually had reached, you know, in our healing journey. What do you suggest to people?
Well, there's so many things, you know, that are beyond our control. We know the trauma happens, you know, with things that happen to us. And also you're raising the things that happen around us that we witness that has an impact as well. And when any of those overwhelming things that, you know, generate some automatic fear. You get dysregulated, and so we can like dissociate and disconnect. So any number of things. The first helps us to kind of reconnect, so we can re-engage with the whole brain and not just, you know, work out of the lizard brain is important. I mean, I've had people talk about a lot of things that are stressful and that are, you know, and even like racism, you know, like we're wired to fear something that's different. We're wired this way. And that's not an excuse. That's a description of how we are wired. But that's, we're more than that, right? So how do we, you know, get out of the lizard brain and reconnect? It's, to me, a first step. And, you know, I appreciate them, you saying, filtering some of the TV frenzy of news of, you know, up-to-the-minute anxiety. So, I mean, there are certain things that, you know, we can do just to reconnect so that we're not coming out of a place of reactivity or fear and, you know, the 80,000 thoughts in our head running, you know, over us. But there are other practical things, and I wonder if, you know, if the topic I suggested, you know, we could take it in reverse order, actually. You know, what are some things that, I'm calling them the ABCs because I have one for every letter. And then maybe some of those might relate to how we deal with the day-to-day kind of stressors, as well as when people are in the process of really, you know, grieving and trying to rebuild from past abuse and traumas that that have been keeping them in that victim loop.
That's a good idea. Yeah, we should talk about that. I have two men, actually, that I'm working with right now that are stuck. And it seems like there's no actual healing progress because they're so wounded by certain things that happen in their lives. And individually, each one is wounded. And they don't know how to bring themselves up out of that wounded area in order to move on. We speak a lot about forgiveness, and they certainly don't want to forgive, and I don't suggest that people have to forgive, all right? I always say God takes care of them because a lot of the things that happened to me are too big, okay? And there was a time in my life when I was so filled with hatred that I wanted to wound people, okay, because they wounded me so deeply, all right? And you know, I tease on the show. I say, well, this one, I want to twist that one's head like The Exorcist, and I want to do this to that one. I want to do that one, you know, all the way down the line. And I had to find a way to get myself out of that mode of thinking because one day, you know, I just fell to the ground. I actually fell to the ground inside the house. I was alone. And I was walking around in circles so filled with hatred. See, hatred is a thing that kills the spirit. It kills every part of your life that could be because you're so focused in on the feelings of hatred that it encompasses the whole being. And this is what I had been going through. And finally, I just collapsed to the floor. I thought, and I was so tired, that's what it was, of being so filled with hate. So I realized I had to come to a different spot in my life. Yes, those people were wrong. I was just a child. And children are never held accountable. They shouldn't be. It's not their fault what happened to them when they were children. Children are just kids, you know. And so I couldn't stop any of the things that was happening to me as a child. I had no control. But what we do have now, you know, is control of our lives today. And this is what I try to tell people in the AM. Can't fix what happened in the past. Can't change it. Can't do it. But what we can do is change ourselves today. And then people start yelling at me, I didn't do this and I didn't do that. Why should I have to change? Oh, boy. So they don't understand the concept of what I'm trying to say. We cannot fix what happened. We can't change it, but we can change ourselves today and move on, start, you know, looking more to the future. Like, I'm not happy now. You know, that's what you say. I'm not happy now. You know, it's time to use self-care, like you had just mentioned. Make ourselves feel better about ourselves and try to do a little bit of goal planning, which is what I used to work with so much with people, starting out at a low level of goal planning. They don't crash. And then, you know, as you find each goal and you get better at what you're doing, then you find more satisfaction within yourself. And all these years that we've been told, we can't do this, we're not smart enough, or you're stupid, or I don't know, I'm just throwing this out, you're funny looking, whatever, I don't know. You know, we realize that those people, you know, were at fault. They didn't know what they were talking about because we are people of worth. And so from this day forward, let's start healing in the sense of using the self-care that you suggest, and making ourselves stronger and healthier, and then, you know, goal plan. You know, you start planning your goals. That's what I tell them.
Hey, I'd like to share a little story, say a little something about this topic before we move on, if I can.
Sure.
Probably can, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
So it's about slowing down. And so when I was in music school, I was attempting to learn piano and composition. And so I had this teacher, and he said to me, so we were told to slow down when we were in practice, you know, and it was a performance degree program. So, and everyone resisted it. I resisted it. So one day I'm taking a private lesson, and he says, slow down, and then he pointed out how when I slowed down, I did make less mistakes, but he pointed out the sound of it. He said, doesn't that sound good? Doesn't that sound better? Didn't that feel good, too? And he would say that. He was a great teacher, because then we'd move on with the lesson, and then he'd stop again, and he'd go, didn't that sound good? Didn't that feel good, the sound of that? You know, and I was a musician, so yes, I loved sound, but my point is that that's where I began to learn that's really helpful always, is to slow down, that I'm in control of that. And I think there was a time where I had taken, you know, I had already taken years of, I'd already practiced meditation, you know, so that I had gone in a disciplined way to a group where, you know, that became a practice. But in terms of, you know, when a little crisis or this and that would come out, I would completely forget that, hey, what about slowing down, until after this event in music, because it was amazing. And the next thing I want to share that's important is that what I have found using this outside of music is that quite frequently, maybe almost all the time, but let's just say quite frequently, whatever it is that comes to me to want to do right after I've slowed down, that's good, you know, that maybe I've been putting off, maybe some writing, maybe some, I don't know, whatever it is, that if I then keep that same attitude, come from that same place of using the slowing down as I try to go forward, there's a phenomena, and musicians seem to know it because that's who taught it to me. That's where I got it, that in music, it's not to go faster that gives you the most production.
Right.
Because it's the same
like
thing over and over again.
I like that. And you bring music in, and piano. I play the piano. And I remember there was one time where I was so angry, I would take it out on the piano. Honey, you didn't want to hear those songs, okay? And then it dawned on me, it's not the piano's fault, it's my fault. I have to. And now the doctor speaks about self-care. So we can use self-care by finding you know, ways to calm ourselves down. Okay, I used to go out and run because in school I was a very good athlete, and that would give me the ability to get rid of all those pent-up feelings. That's a way of self-care. That's how I look at self-care. And then come in and play the piano maybe an hour later or something, and what I would play would be a beautiful song because I had gone from point A to point B, and point B was a slower, if you want to use that terminology, a slower way because I'd gotten rid of all that anguish that I was so filled with. And then I was able to compose, because I used to make up songs. Compose, I had one stolen. That made me mad. But to compose a song that was beautiful and calming. So,
you know, I think music is so powerful. I think music is so powerful and transcendental that it even goes above and beyond that need to feel like you did something good. You're like in a in a higher place than that or something. You know, it's beyond that. Was the song good? Was the song beautiful? That slowing down process, acknowledgement of being here in the moment. I mean, the concept that I'm bringing forth, you know, it's Judeo-Christian. It certainly is. There's be still and know I am God. Be still, says there, right? That's Judeo-Christian. Mm-hmm. You know, there's places in Buddhism where that's the main lesson, is to be still, slow down first before anything, you know?
Yeah.
It seems to be like a universal message. And then that which you undertake next is coming from your eyes. But music is very powerful. A suggestion would be like make a list for yourself of tunes that you know that when you put that on, you go into a certain state. You know, then it's just a map. But you got to get still first to remember these things, you know, I think.
Well, I want to join with the idea of how powerful sound is, and music in particular, that it's creative, and so it moves something in us beyond our physical or in-the-moment stresses. And I usually have something in the background that may not be music per se, but it's soothing sounds. And you know, there's a science to it. You know, it goes from the ear to the heart, and it helps to regulate. You know, it goes to the vagus nerve and sends out dopamine and serotonin and these naturally soothing things. And that's just the listening, the passive side. So the active is, I think, even better. But I wonder if by slowing down, if you can just like throw out the first five letters. And I think it relates to being able to slow down to be able to do some of these things. And then again, see if there's any interest in expanding these, and you know, we can go through a list and have a conversation in that way. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, somebody start, because my mind is blank with that one.
Oh, no. Well, I'm telling you, I have a list. I'm just going to
write
it
down
like five at a time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead. That helps.
So we're going to do the other side. Oh, wait, are we going to still
exhausted.
Split up? All right, cool.
Pardon?
Go ahead.
But I thought, well, let's just start with these and then see if what we have time for. But the first with A, I'm just saying, allow yourself to mourn and to feel, and then even understand what has happened to us. And A is also asking for help. So in the healing side, those may be new behaviors, but to slow down allows us to mourn. B, I have become a friend to yourself. I mean, you may be really good at paying attention to and helping others and being present to others. But again, slowing down is present to ourselves. You can pay attention to what our body is telling us, you know, what we may need in our bodies and our minds and our spirit. C, I have consider being safe, healthy, and happy. And I say consider because some people don't know what that really is. And so it's not even a consideration, or it's the idea that maybe we have about being, you know, healthy and happy might be from TV shows. They're very unrealistic. So just really consider for ourselves what that means. Again, needing time to ourselves to slow down, think. The D is do something in a natural setting that helps soothe your soul. And as I'm looking at my computer right now, it has all these beautiful settings, you know, so things like that. Maybe a proxy for actually being out. And E, expand your vocabulary to include words of affirmation for ourselves and for others. Because I think you mentioned, Carol, that, you know, we may sometimes lead by either critiquing or somehow blasting others. And then, you know, that becomes part of our vocabulary, or a big part. And the other side is the rebuilding, you know, the affirmation of our goodness and of others. So I'll stop there. So this is just, you know, the first A through E of, these are some slow building blocks. I'm certainly a fan of more direct trauma-informed kind of approaches, and I'll talk about that later, but these are, what do you think?
I like that. This is an actual exercise, you know, and it's something that the mind directs itself to focus on. So the one thing that we have to do is not focus so much on, you know, what's going on around us, which we don't have control of, and instead to focus instead on serenity, something that we can, you know, bring forth by doing an exercise like what you're putting forth here now. It's like an exercise.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It gets you out of the mindset that you're in and takes you to another, like transforms. It's like a transformation of where you are at now and going to. And then while you're there, it slows you down. We can use, you know, regular girl's word there, which I think is very good. And because you see people are so speeded up right now and so frantic, I think that's a better word, frantic, because they don't know what to do. So if they do slow down and they allow for themselves to breathe and allow for themselves to, you know, to look beyond and find some place where their mind can go, then I think that's probably a good thing to do. Yeah, I like mm-hmm. that.
I found the list really thought-provoking. You know, each one that you read, I felt it was thought-provoking. So you said a lot, you know, and we could say a lot about it. You were like, so maybe you could pick one or two of them we could do tonight, and too bad we don't have you come. You should come back again and do this again. That's what I think.
Go ahead.
Because my memory is not good enough. I don't have the paper. Or if we had a Zoom, I would have those in front of me and I could see and read them. But my memory is not good enough that I can remember everything that you said. You know, right now, because we're doing it just with audio.
So one, I'm serious about just sending a box, because this comes from the workbook, actually, and I'd be happy to send, and I don't know whoever would be the distributor person to whoever might want, but I like your idea of just picking, you know, a couple and then really spending some time with it.
Maybe me and Carol, not knowing, can just pick letters randomly. We'll say a little prayer that we tune into the right letter, like we're in a lottery. You go first, Carol.
That's great.
Pick a letter.
Sure.
I'm picking C.
Well,
I don't want any
C
dead air on the radio.
Consider.
I'll jump in right in. You did? A, B, C.
So
this is the third
you,
one.
You picked C, right?
Yeah.
That's what she picked, yeah.
Carol, pick a letter.
So
pick a letter, Carol.
I want to say...
A.
Okay, cool.
Okay. So I want to say with
it's like
D,
a game,
there's
I love
actually
it.
There's actually three parts to it that I've built into the list. So I'll put all three together, and then we can make it spend time with that. Because the first is consider being safe, healthy, and happy. And the next that relates to that is imagine being safe, healthy, and happy. And then the next related to that is plan being safe, healthy, and happy, and practicing that. And so the reason I did that is that I think that there's a practice going from, you know, what's in our head to the practice, to actually applying it. And just that kind of awareness, like, oh, wow, you know, being safe and healthy and happy is might be possible. I grew up in a way that didn't make sense. You know, I lived in a violent home. There was a lot of, you know, there's alcoholism. We were hungry. Ended up, you know, kind of being abandoned, sexually abused by priests. So that none of that self healthy and happy made sense. And even as an adult, I mean, I kind of chased after things like that with a fury. And then the imagining, though, is like, yeah, let me actually think of what that could be like. And then the planning is where, yeah, I have what's good for my physical safety, my emotional safety. I mean, I have, you know, boundaries, and I have exercise practice, I have meditation practice, gratitude practice. I mean, that's an actual, the plan becomes normal. That becomes the ground. So that's what I take from C. How does that work for you?
Yeah, I really, what flips through my mind immediately was when you talked about how, you know, none of that makes sense in the childhood. And, you know, even especially the transition from being imagining to the planning, you know. Especially, I think especially that planning for me is the way my defense mechanisms, you know, disordered all of that in my own behavior. Afterwards, it was like, you know, what's the point of planning anything? It's always going to get disrupted, you know, and you miss a lot. I never would have learned how to play the piano had I taken that, had I kept that attitude, the music practice. Once again, the sound, you know, because of the sound. Mm. But so that's what came up for me, you know, for me as And
what is that? What's that noise in the background? What do I hear?
That's in the distance for me too. So it's probably some kind of motor thing.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I don't know what it is, but that's what my mind was focusing on. I'm hearing what? What is that? I like the idea of what you're both saying. The calming effect, to calm the mind down, to slow the mind down. So many survivors do suffer from the racing mind. Okay, the racing mind is what I call it. And, you know, there's medication for that, I know that. But then there are those like myself, I don't want to take medication, I want to work it out. I don't like to take medication unless I really have to. And it can actually wear you out. It can wear you down. So to sit and plan, you know, I tell people to get involved with crafts, you know, do something you like, or with the, like with the piano, which I used to play all the time. I don't. I sing now instead of playing the piano. I like to sing. But that's how I find my peace, is through singing. We have to find something that's going to calm the soul, okay? Calm the spirit. And, you know, if we can find something that's positive, that calms down the spirit so that you can, you know, focus on that, and then afterwards you have a sense of satisfaction and you calm down. Because in the world that we live in today, many times I think that people call me up, some of them, not all of them, but they need to hear my voice. This may sound weird to you, too. I don't know. But they need to hear my voice and know that I'm there, because so many people feel alone again. They feel alone, doctor, okay? Mm-hmm. So they know if they call me, oh, even if it's 2-3 o'clock in the morning, I am there. And one night I heard one of them start to snore. Like that, a good healthy one. It was good. So I was able to just shut the phone off there. Then I hung up on them because they were snoring. They were sleeping good. I'm glad, all right. But I think that before you reach that point where you're able to snore because you're at the point where you're able to relax enough so that you can go to sleep instead of worrying all the time about things that we don't, like you said, have any control over, it's good to then find interests, what you're interested in, come more in touch with yourself. And don't always think that if you start something, you can't finish it because you're not talented enough or you're not smart enough or whatever it might be. Give it a little time and then move on. Find something else of interest. And, find something that'll take us away, from what we're going with today. That old advertisement on TV, Calgon, take me away. You know, and the lady in the bathtub and she's, Calgon, take me away. Well, that's what we need to do today, is to find something that'll slow our minds down so we can focus on something that will make us feel better and also, again, have a sense of satisfaction. Regular girl, when you play a song on the piano, I don't know if you play by ear or if you play by note or both, but I usually played by ear, and I would compose songs. And like I said, one had gotten stolen from me. I was just a kid, and I had no one to help me. I told my mother, but she didn't care. And it ended up on TV. You know how the Exxon gas station used to be Esso years ago?
Yeah.
Years ago, yeah. So years ago, it was Esso. And here it shows a family who going up a mountainside, you know, they'd gotten gas at the SL gas station, okay, and then the dog's head is hanging out the window, and you see, you know, the proper family, which is something that most of us, many of us, never had. We didn't have proper, ideal type of bringing up. But you see the family all together, and they're all happy, and the dog's head is hanging out the window, and there's my song in the background as they're going up the hill. You know what I'm saying? And it gave me at first I was angry, and then secondly, I was also satisfied because it showed that I had talent, okay? My parents never told me, or mother, stepfather, anyone said, you know, really that I had real talent. So, so I had to accept that happened. And, but also too, be happy that I was able to put something together that made it as far as it did. I don't speak about that very often.
Well, I see it as a form of abuse. Only it was done by a higher like sort of governmental authority. You know, you witnessed, you know, the theft of your song, and you knew that there was money involved. So there was, it's how it replicates. There's some practices and corruption in government that replicate the abuse that I think that many of us experience. And safety, I want to, if I can, while I still have a mic, because that's what this thing talked about, was safety. And I realized, as you were talking to Carol, and before that, see, I think safety is a funny thing with we survivors, because it's like that story of the frogs who are in the kettle, you know, and they put the flame up real slow. It's like, we were in dangerous situations, fearing for our lives, many of us, quite literally. And yet, there was this false feedback from reality. You know, nobody said, hey, this is strange. You're not safe. You know, we were with the people who were supposed to be telling us that. So as a result, I know for me, it took me one of the longest things to do to recognize that I had to kind of wake up that I was like a magnet for unsafe situations. And what was the, and I probably got that from insight, from, you know, starting to realize that by realizing, remembering what happened back then. And so safety is an important topic, I think, for us, you know, kind of realizing that, hey, yeah, you know, I have this history, and I'm working on it, you know, but whilst that's happening, there ain't no, you know, king of the recovery thing happening yet. You know, we don't know where this is all gone. It's a journey. And so for me anyway, and safety and, you know, that's what I have to say in response to what you asked me, Carol, was, you know, that's how I view it. That's what it was.
But I also want to gonna add to that idea about safety. And Carol, your example, there was somebody who in a sense betrayed. You know, they took what wasn't theirs. They broke or crossed boundaries of sort. You know, and that's critical to safety, is that we have, for our own personal sense of boundaries, that we, you know when something is being violated or torn. And so, yeah, we can be socialized, and especially as children, not having the ability to understand exactly what's happening. That's boundaries to me is a sign of healing, because that allows us to, not have rigid boundaries in response to having no boundaries or to having them being so shattered, but to establish for ourselves. And that,
And you had nobody there you had nobody else there to protect your boundaries either. You know, it was like an assault on your creativity. It was like an assault on your creativity, really.
It was.
You know?
Yes.
And there was no one there to protect that boundary for you, you know, so that you were not assaulted. And you've grown up since, and you've learned that, wow, some kids get that, you know. Some kids have somebody there. Wonder what that feels like, you know. But if that's good, because then we can begin to maybe start to have that attitude towards ourselves. Oh, that's what that looks like. Because we never certainly saw that, you know. So instead of, because I get jealous sometimes when I see that. And so, but then I've learned to, like, turn that around and say, oh, no. And really quickly now, too, where I go to the beautiful part of it. Wow, what would that be like? Yeah. That's the way to do it, you know. I remember one time when I was working with that same teacher, a memory came up, okay, of I was practicing piano, because when I was a kid, we took these classical lessons that I hated. But I was practicing one day after school, and my father came home, and my sister and brother were there, too, at the same time, and he was nuts, like he had flipped. So he went around, and the way we knew it was he started emptying all the trash baskets into the center of the floor. It was a sign that some sort of weird Nazi punitive thing was going to happen, and we had to fear for our lives, so he was going to beat us somehow, okay? So he grabs me by the back off the back of the piano seat. So my teacher says to me, when I tell him this story, he stops, and he says, I think I learned it from the way they were, too. He stopped, and he said, but wait a minute, this process of you sitting down at the piano again, this must be a little painful for you at times. And it was like a window open, you know what I mean, to my ability to practice the actual piano from then on, but also into a whole other room full of recovery, maybe let's call it, just because I don't know where that's coming from.
Right. Well, I did feel betrayed, going back to betrayal, all right? I did, absolutely. I was heartbroken. Let's call it what it was, okay? One of my friends called me up on the phone quickly and said, Carol, turn on Channel 5. In those days, we had the lower channels. But anyway, all right. So I turned on Channel 5, and there I saw my creation going up the hill, all right, if you will. So I had, the man was over. We had a guy who was known in the town to be a very good musician and also one that would, you know, take kids who had talent and put them out there and with the parents' permission. So I had a bad habit of just playing that song that I had made when I was 10 years old, okay, up on the piano, okay. And I would just play and talk at the same time. And he recorded that. He recorded that.
Mm-hmm.
He was able to get the voices out of it and just played the music, and that's where how it ended up there. Now, the good part of that story is, like I said, I do sing. I sing quite well, yet. I don't know how, but I do. I sing better than I speak. I may sound very crackly. Regular girl knows. She knows I can go, ah, ah, because I talk so much. I think I screw up my voice. But anyway, when I sing, I don't have that. And so I sing quite well, yet. And so this man, the same man that took my song, and of course it was never addressed, that issue, did get later on, in more of my teenage years, he did put myself and my friends in New York City, and we were in bands. We never had to plan things because it was always rearranged. A limousine would come to the house, pick me up, pick my friends up, we'd go into the city. And it was always arranged ahead of time where we would sing, and we'd get $50, as they say, a pop, okay? Now, in those days, $50 a pop was quite good, especially for background singers. Sometimes they would pull me out in the front, and you know, I'm panic child. So I made sure that I was doing some heavy drinking before I got out in the front, all right? But I learned things about myself through my musical ability. Yes, I was angry, and I was betrayed, and I had no one else to turn to. In fact, when that guy was one of the people that I wanted to twist his head, I was talking about before. You know, you don't do that to people. I know you don't do that, okay? You don't do that. But on the other hand, I did have something positive come out. And to be honest with you, I look back on those days in the city, in New York City, which I love, not so much right now, of course, with 21, but, you know, I have a love for the city, and I made it at least that far. Didn't make it to Hollywood, regular girl, but I made it to New York City, all right? So that was okay. We used to live in and out of New York. So the only good thing that I could see that came out of that was that I realized that I did have talent, and that talent made me feel better about me. I had something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So thank you. And if I may, I want to pick up the letter A and link it to what you've been sharing.
Okay.
So A, again, is allow yourself time to mourn, feel, and understand what happened to you. That's one of it. And it seems to me that, you know, it may be much later that we really understand, you know, oh, wow, that was betrayal. Oh, wow, no one talked about it. That was a secondary kind of betrayal. Or, and then the complexity of, and here's the same person who, if you think about it as like a perpetrator, you know, that's so common, you know, certainly in my experience, where the perpetrator also then gave some kind of privilege or gave some kind of experience that would have been otherwise unavailable because, you know, just in my little home, they didn't have the network of contacts or resources. And so there's that mixed, kind of confused experience with victims of some kind of abuse. And I know, an example of that that's so common with people who have been abused by clergy is that we have gone back, you know, maybe after dissociating from those experiences and then going back years later, perhaps, you know, and getting married, you know, and saying, would you participate? That was my case. I had no conscious memory of the abuse that went on when I was a teenager, and so here I am in my later 20s. And it was when I went back that I, you know, had this loyalty and had this deep appreciation for the trips that I was gifted with, or the clothes, or other gifts and experiences. But then I smelled that cologne, and it triggered, and I wanted to kill him. I didn't know why. All I'm saying is it's so common for us to have both something happen to us that shouldn't, as well as then there's this other side of ongoing relationship where we actually get some kind of benefit, and it's a lot to sort through. But it may be years later that we figure it out, or others can point out the dynamics, like, oh yeah, that shouldn't have happened. That was boundaries. That was a betrayal. That was somebody not helping you be safe.
Absolutely, yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that mourning process, part of it is anger. So that's good. Feel what we feel. Sorry, go ahead.
I had a tremendous amount of anger because you see, I started to sing when I was 4 years old. I was one of those kids, and my mother would take me and my so-called bio father at that time to the Hudson River, and there was a. It was kind of funny. I went to the guys. Guys are such guys, regular girl. They'd all line up with their cars, okay? And they were all very proud of their cars. And my so-called father would, he actually had a rumble seat car that he had purchased, okay? And they go back to what, the 30s or something? Does anyone know? The 30s, the 40s? I don't know.
They do.
But
yeah, I know about the rumble seat.
Yeah, well, my brother and I were stuck back there, so and he was always hitting me. I remember that. But anyway, they had these classic cars, and they were so proud of their cars. And then we'd go inside, you know, to a place similar to Cheers. You remember what Cheers looked like on TV. I loved that show. It was a lot of fun. But there would be a band there, though. This is a band, and it was a restaurant, but everybody knew your name. You know, you remember the theme song where everyone knows your name, right? It was that type of place, a family place. And at 4 years old, my mother would shove me up there and expect me to sing, but not little girl songs, regular girl. Like the big song of that time, of that era, were Harbor Lights. Well, I didn't even know what Harbor Lights were. I was 4 years old. You know what I'm saying? Dr. Robo, have you ever heard Harbor Lights?
I
that song?
Maybe. I don't I know the name, but I don't really know the song.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I had to sing that song. And I guess I did it pretty well. Maybe people loved it, too, because I was only 4 years old, you know. So that was the beginning, you might say, of my musical time in my life, but they could have taken that talent and run with it and helped me and so forth, and maybe I would even have gotten a lot further. I don't know, because I got into sex, drugs, and rock and roll. All right, so, you know, by the time I ended up going to the city, I ended up with other people, and I ended up in bands, Okay, I was terribly betrayed, but on the other hand, some good did come out of it. Now, I'm not looking for good to come out of it. Some good actually did come out of it because I was able to create and I was able to sing my heart out in the bands, and I felt so much better. So I'm trying to explain to people that during this time that we're going through, which we have no control over, like you said, Dr. Roma, we have no control over this, not right now. No, we don't. Find something, with, you know, to create or to be a part of, something that lifts your spirits, and that's a part of self-care, which is something that you had started on, because if you find something that makes you feel better, then that's caring for yourself and caring for the child within. You know, you're making that child happy too, and that's so important.
Thanks. Those were two letters. Those are...
There you go.
Do you feel up to taking in two more letters?
Let's see, N and P. There you go.
N, like Nancy?
Mm-hmm. N and P.
Okay. I'm laughing.
Oh, I've got a pupling for you there. Go ahead.
Well, so let me start with T because it just made me laugh. Take time to consider that others might be envy because of you.
Well, that's interesting. Wait a minute. Some people might be in therapy because of me? Oh, my God. What would I do?
Yeah. Well, see, that's – so here, you know, it's easy for me to say I was in therapy because of my dad. He was an alcoholic. He was violent. I was in therapy because of this priest who was sexually abusive. Or I was in therapy because, well, you know, it's those – what happens to us is obvious for the most part. And then we may also take in, you know, what happened around us, and that was a lot. But I think what's hardest often is to appreciate, okay, now those things aren't happening anymore, but we've internalized all that, and we're doing it to ourselves. So that's another direction. But then how have we then, coming from where we were coming from, impacted others? And so, I mean, the way I've seen that in my life dramatically was, you know, I was kind of abandoned and then abused and then wrapped in shame growing up. Right? So disconnected from the abuse, overachieved to kind of feel better about myself somehow, even though there was this, always this kind of gnawing discontent and shame, no matter whatever degrees I got and positions I took up or salary and any of those things that seemed to be rewards for, you know, success. And so then I realized, okay, so I was a bad abuser, wrapped in shame, but then I drove myself hard to achieve. And I was not, you know, maybe as part of it youth, but it was part of it was just numbing. You know, I was abusive to myself and still wrapped in shame. And then I realized, okay, and what about the people around me? I've abandoned them because I was in my victim wild, you know, losing my mind and, you know, I had PTSD. And before that, I was working like crazy and going to school and all these kind of good things, but I was abandoning others. I was doing, in a sense, what others had done to me. Then I was not, like, physically, sexually abusive, but I was demanding on the people around me that they be perfect, you know, and that then wrapped them in shame. And I had these high expectations for myself and even higher for the others. So that's what I mean. Like, oh my God, part of my healing was not just what happened to me and then realizing what I had done to myself, but then the impact on others. And so the reverse of that was then, you know, I need to be present to myself. I need to be good, take care of myself, take care of my body, take care of my mind, take care of my spirit, and acknowledge, you know, be pleased with the goodness that is in me. You know, not like the narcissism or, you know, some warped ego. And then to share that with others. So, but that was an important piece, you know, to acknowledge and to hate the idea and the feel of, oh my God, yeah, other people have been hurt by me and I didn't even know it. So that's how I see the...
Did you go to those people?
You know, it's a sign, when they sign of healing.
Did you, in the course of realizing that maybe because you were a child of, you know, of this and that, whatever happened to you, okay, of abuse, though, and maybe you did harm other people because of what happened to you, and did you ever go to those people and say, I'm sorry if I offended you or if I, you know, did something to hurt your feelings, whatever? Did you ever ask?
Well, in different ways. I mean, the immediate group, of course, was my family, you know,
right.
Wife and kids. and that was really important, and that was an ongoing process, and we have much better relationships. I mean, I've thought about my colleagues when I was an academic or a teacher, and just how, you know, like how I competed and how I was like just wanted to win and thought it was just being smart and an academic. And, you know, I had real disdain for people, and that was not good. And there, in some cases, I've gone back, or even in college with friends at a reunion, saying, oh, my God, I didn't realize. I just, you know, now see that, you know, this is something I did, or just in general, I was such a jerk. So there have been times like that. Now, you know, more and more just in the moment, just acknowledging that there are more perspectives.
Wow, I really related, to your talking about the overachievement. And, you know, once again, funnily enough, in music school is where I began to see that that couldn't help come into my singing. You know, how could it not get into my singing somehow? This, you know, insane competitiveness, you know? And I think I was also beginning to see the trajectory of that. It was like a dead end. It was like a rat spinning in a wheel, you know, because the quote, whoever I was doing this for was never going to be satisfied. That was the whole, you know, tone of the game there. And this, how scolded it was that there was it was so non-competitive. This and there was a performance degree program. It was the first time in my life that I was in a place with other singers, and they're just really great singers. And I thought to myself, oh my God, I can sing, because there was always a part of me that thought maybe I couldn't. But there was no competitiveness. It was gone. The focus was on the music in this particular degree program. It was on the music. It was like the spiritual conductor had entered my life and said, you know, if you don't play the right note at the right time by listening to directions, you know, you're going to mess up the song, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm sort of all levels. And I think I began to see and get an insight that there was a narcissistic disturbance in me, you know, I had wasted all this time with this gift by it never being good enough, you know. I would spend hours and hours, you know, doing it, honing the craft, and it was like it was never good enough. And to get off that bus was just incredible. And I go through periods where I have stopped singing, but that's happened to me before. And I'm curious now, though, about the lives and the psyches of other singers. You know, I'm starting, as I begin to talk only a little bit about myself like that, I'm hearing about other people who are in a way that I never have before. And it's curious to me, you know, like what I want to say, and then I'll stop for now, is that as I begin to sing again, I have more desire to. It's coming from that place of the love of the sound and the desire to, and to get out, to stay out of that place of whether it's good or not. And it's very, very difficult. I need God for that and nothing less. It's my narcissism. But it does me no good. I had an audition once where I was shaking so badly that my whole body was like trembling, right? And I finished, and, you know, I passed my audition, but he said to me, this conductor, you know, on 57th Street in New York City, I just come from Hawaii, he said, but as a side note, you know, that whole, he said it like it was like not like nothing, but right straight to my face, that whole shaken, nervous thing, it doesn't serve anybody or you. That's what he said. But it wasn't, maybe it sounds too harsh. I know it did, as I said, because there was something else. He was the conductor, and there was this vibe of great kindness that came from him. And I realized as I began to be a part of this chorus, the New York Choral Society, that he was, as a conductor, right, he really, in a way, was conducting human beings, you know, like people. Mm. He dealt with us. We were people, too. We weren't just notes, and yet we were just notes. You know, it was an amazing, interesting, I thought to myself, wow, to be that person as a soul, you know, is very interesting. The connection between psyche and music and us, you know, and that's what I was listening to most when I was, you know, listening to you, Carol. You know, I said, I have a couple of questions, and maybe you sort of about, you know, how does it have a place in your life today? It seems like I didn't. And I don't know. I guess maybe I can stop now. Haven't we gone over time?
No, we have like 15 minutes or so, like six.
Okay.
Well, we have about 15 minutes, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to mute for a minute. There's some background noise coming up.
Okay. I really... appreciate the kind of the metaphor of music and playing together, singing together, you know, that really highlights in a creative way, a constructive way, how we need to listen. I mean, it is slowing down. Yes, it is getting beyond the technical, you know, what we're doing to listen. And that's one of the things that lifts my spirit, you know. So I'm not a great musician. I'm certainly not a performer, but I'm a good enough guitar player, and I'm a good enough singer that I can listen and join and blend, and that's like a positive thing, because I love that. Because the other side is kind of unsettling, like, you know, in a work situation or in a relationship or, you know, that if something's not going well, maybe I've got part of it, and I think it's the other person. I mean, I can often think when things are going wrong, like everybody else is goofing off or doing something that they shouldn't be doing. So it's there's that self or egocentric or even narcissistic part that I don't like to acknowledge, and so I'll just say, well, it's there. It's a little bit there, but not that much. But I love that metaphor. And the flip side of, you know, how to really pay attention to others and really understand the interconnection and the ways that we're better together.
Yeah, I like that too. I like that. You know, it's really, if you look at all the famous singers, you know, or the musicians, it doesn't just have to be singers, but a lot of them came from pasts that were very sad, okay? You have these all different categories of music, like the soul music. They have they put their guts and their heart into their singing. I happen to like that type of music, too. I mean, I like all kinds of songs and all different kinds of different, you know, singing and so forth. But they put so much of their heart into it. And much more so than, say, like the rock and roll. That's like a different type of, you know, a tempo and a different type of feeling. And I'm not into rap at all. I mean, that to me just seems silly, you know. But although maybe it's good for their expression, all right, the expression of themselves. So I can't take away, because maybe for them that's their way of expressing themselves. You know, for whatever it is, you know, that's one thing. Music is something that I can find to be healing, no matter what kind it is, you know, whatever your preference might be, to the soul and get you up out. I can be so, so depressed, okay? And even if I don't feel like singing or playing the piano, I have a piano here too, even if I don't feel like it, I will go and put myself into it. Now, singing is easier for me somehow rather than the piano, because I many times would take out my frustrations, like I mentioned earlier, on the piano, and you wouldn't like those songs. I didn't like them, but it was like me expressing myself, and what I learned to do later on, instead of ruining the piano, was to go out and run, okay? And we always had huge places where I could run and run and run. I came from wealth, but was treated like someone that was less than and not cared for. Even my clothing, I had to go and steal clothing, and yet I came from wealth. So I'm not going to get into my story, but I can tell you this. I was denied many things in my life, and one of the biggest things was love. So a lot of the songs that I would make up, whether it was on the piano or some of the songs that I would sing, were songs from the heart. And I think, though, that, you know, if people can do that, if they can find, they don't have to be a singer, they don't have to be a wonderful singer, they don't have to be a wonderful pianist, okay? But if they can find something, because I think music has a way of healing. I believe that. It can actually help heal a person's soul because they get so into it, you know, and that's a positive thing, not a negative thing. Now, maybe it's just my love of music that I speak this way, but I can certainly speak for myself that by doing this, I can bring myself out of total down depression, because at one time I was considered to be clinically depressed. And that was a bad place to be. So I got more into my music, and it helped me lift myself up out. It's sort of like self-care, because what I did was I lifted myself up out of that clinical state of mind, and I became, again, like almost like a new person, because then I got into music again. And that soothed, I'm going to use the word soothe, since we're using you know, letters and so forth, and we're talking about self-care. That soothed my soul and made me feel so much better. So I think people have to find something, especially in the world that we live in today, the things that we can't control and we have no control of. And understandably so, people are so filled with so much anguish. I mean, I don't want to sing, you know, or sound like, were people from the 60s and with the flower children or something, you know, because what's happening in front of us and with us and to us is something that's quite tragic. So I think that we have to find something to help us get out of that state of mind. I really do. I have Kathy Johnson on here also. Hey, Kathy, how you doing?
Fine. I've been listening for... Well, most of the show, and I was thinking about betrayal and furthering things that you find an interest in. Yours is music and singing, and for me it was design and construction. And I guess I maybe felt a little bit looking at everyone else who's done all of these wonderful projects, so I couldn't be that or I couldn't be that good. You got to try. You got to give it. And after renovating and building 3 homes and having the beauty of looking out of my beautiful window, I think I've mentioned it before, I have landscape and gorgeous, not landscape really, it's natural God's landscape to view, that it's just really very comforting, and I don't think anyone should give up on thinking that someone else is better, so therefore you shouldn't, you know, I could never get there, you know. You'll get where you get. Anyway, it's been a great conversation. I appreciate all of you for chiming in, and thanks for letting me on. But betrayal is another thing that I heard you speak of, and it's true. People should just be honest and not try to, you know, scam people or betray them in some ridiculous way. It never pans out to any good for anyone. So anyway, I just want to thank you all for that. I wish I could feel safer with many of the discussions and the people, but, you know, people all have their own ideas, and I get to be a bug, though, so thank you for letting me in. I got permission to be.
Always,
I got a permission
now, Kath,
to be
you
the
know,
bug.
You know, you're always welcome. You know that.
Well,
and
I would like to think. I would like to think that, but I would. You know, I don't feel that way all the time. I've wanted to call in several other times and have declined because of being betrayed. So, you know, I'm hoping that clears up with NASCA. Anyway, so I would, but I thank you all for, you're all good people, and I know you mean well, and you want to do well, I do too, so, but anyway,
I
have beautiful, I have beautiful views, and I go to sleep at night and open the window and look outside and hear the natural beauty, because I live in the woods a mile from the town, which is already only like under 500 people there, so it's not really very many people living here. We're living in the wilderness, and it's nice.
Yeah, we spoke about that once before, but she has 500. Mm-hmm. I think I have around 1,000, maybe. So I'm doubly as big as her than she.
1,000 what? 1,000 what?
People.
500 what?
People?
Oh, I don't have. I have myself. I tell you, that's another thing. I had some of these things I hear so many survivors have had. I think I've been lucky. Can I use that? Because I think that I've been lucky that I have not had. I never felt any of it was my fault. Surely I went through some coping mechanisms because it affected me, whether it was my fault or not. You know, it's none of our. It's never our
mm-hmm.
fault that we're abused. But it does affect us, and you know, that took some coming to terms with. But yeah, you know, I think it's good, and I think I'm in a healthy position right now. And but I would love to feel as though I'm a family member and I have family here, because there isn't really a lot of people who get it. And so you know, I would like to think that you know, there's some people over here at NASCA who get it.
Well, you know, there are people here at NASCA who do get it, okay?
Well,
you have three people right here who do get it. The doctor.
Well,
then
I don't think any of you would if I called you up would say fuck you or go to hell or you're a bigot and all this crap, which I've heard already from, and I was hoping I would never hear it again, and I hope not to. So I'm glad that I wasn't answered on the phone by anyone who would cuss me out, which happened before, calling into NASCA. And I don't want that to happen
really?
Again. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That wouldn't happen with me. No, no,
oh, it
no,
didn't
no.
happen with you. It did not happen with you. It's never happened with you. But it has happened. It has happened. I have received that. And I don't want to hear that.
You know, you should have, let's listen to me, Kathy. You should have told me. I would address that issue. I'm vice president.
Well, I hope you will. I thought about calling you. I wanted to call Bill also. But, you know, I want to call a woman who cares about women, because we are women, and no one can become a woman.
You can call me. You can call me. Look, I have so many people who call me. You can call me, you know.
Yeah, I know that, but, you know, I get up at 5:30, 6 o'clock Eastern time, and, you know, then by 10:30, 11 o'clock, I'm doing my day. But I'm up still. This is late for me, and I thank you. But, no, betrayal matters.
Well, hey, I'm the night owl. Now, you know
I know that,
that
but
you
you're not up at what, you know, your Eastern time, Central time. Your
no,
Central
I'm
time,
Eastern.
I think.
Okay, no,
well
no,
you're
I'm
not
Eastern.
Up at you're not up at 5:30, 6:30 in the morning. So and I'm not
oh,
going to call
you.
You
don't think so, honey? You don't think so?
I already waited until later. But I would love to, and if you can give me your word that you'll address it, I would love to spend some time talking to you and Bill about it.
No, we absolutely.
And regular girl, I really appreciate it. I've heard your last several shows, and I think you're an angel. I hope she's listening.
Oh, that's cute. Yes, she is.
I'm not,
yes,
but
is.
Thank you. I'm not, but thank you.
But it matters. I think honesty
something.
And authenticity matters. That's what's important to me. And I'd love to hear more about prevention, because that's what's also important
yes.
to me. But I was able to pursue, and I don't think any of us should hesitate on pursuing those passions that we find important. If singing is it, for me it was design. And I remember thinking, well, I don't have the experience or whatever, but I dove in, which is not unusual, dive in, sink or swim, and I'm still swimming. I'm still doing okay. I'm an old lady, and I'm ready to get on camera. Almost, I'm getting the camera figured out with one of these things, and I'm going to go ahead and let my toothless smile smile and let it go.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter whether you have teeth or not. And you know, we should.
I know. Well, I've only got a few.
It might be better. This may become like in the future they'll look back on us toothless women and go, wow, that's cool.
I tried to fake teeth, and ain't nobody else putting those screws in my head to put it. I don't want to get my head screwed with.
No.
That's those teeth. They put screws in your head, you know, to keep the teeth in. That's not my cup of tea. I'm not for that. But anyway, I don't mind. And I did confront my abuser, and I did get some restitution from the family, which was, you know, okay. And I have vowed to return that restitution to the organizations that promote and prevent the prevention of child abuse, because grooming, all of these things are just so terrible, and they're happening right before our eyes. And while it's great that we survive and we know what it's like, it just breaks my heart when I know children are being hurt. And, you know, Carol, I've told you stories through the times, throughout the years of my life. If I see something, I do what I can at the moment. You know, help someone else, help them out, listen to them, let them, give them a safe space to talk. And I'd like
That's
to
right.
think that I have that with NASCA. I don't want that to be destroyed. You all really, really are committed to helping people, so... When you have someone that doesn't do that, I think it should be addressed. I hope you will.
All right. Well, you know, we'll talk about that at another time. And
sure.
I do receive phone calls at 4 o'clock in the morning. I have this one lady. To me, she's a kid. All right. I think she's in her 30s, but anyway, that's a kid to me. All right. So, but. Sometimes all she needs to do is hear my voice, and I know she's taking her meds, and all of a sudden she starts to yawn very, very heavily. This isn't the same person I was talking about before, by the way. And all of a sudden I'll hear her. I've heard her snore a couple times. She needs to hear my voice. It's like I'm a mother figure to her. You know what I'm saying? So I get all kinds of people, some that are very, very, very upset, distraught, and then other people just need that safety net, like we did speak a little bit about tonight, that safety net, and you just mentioned it too, a safe place to talk, that safety net. And so that's what we do here at NASA. And the show
well,
is just about
up, I look forward to having that happen.
All right, well, yeah, we'll have a phone call, okay? We'll have a talk, okay?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right, honey. I'm getting beeped already that it's going down to 60 seconds. This show went very fast. It really did. I have to admit that. So, anyway, I want to thank everyone that was on the show tonight. Dr. Romo, that was interesting. I like the way you use the letters that way. And I only heard you once before, and you had done it that night also. You were with Tammy. Tammy had been, you know, with you that night. And... So it's interesting the way you use the letters and how you use it in a psychological sense. I like that. Mm. And regular girl, I think you're an angel too. So there. She's still there? No, yeah, she's still there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all angels. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. So it was a good show. It was an interesting show. I liked it. And thank you, Doctor, for being on. I enjoyed the show. And... I'll probably be the one that will be with you from now on. I do think
okay.
that that's the way it's going to be. So, anyway, that's fine. That's fine and dandy. So, good night, everyone. I have 10 seconds to close this down. Good night, and God bless you.
Night.
Good night.
It
was
really great meeting you. That's
all.
You are forgotten.
Indeed. Okay.